Sports Radio. The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
We're heading into the home straight. Keys will be dissolved on the 13th of August. Candidate nomination period closes on the 26th of August. And we've got a general election on Thursday, the 24th of September. But in the meantime, the process of government and the business of government goes on. And pivotal to that is the Treasury Ministry, the department which governs the finances. It's often said the government department that likes to say no to everybody, because it should do, because it needs to find out where our money is going. And Chris Thomas, MHK, the Treasury Minister, is with us today. Faster Mike, good afternoon.
Faster Mike, good afternoon. Listeners, good afternoon, Andy.
Well, I suppose I must start. I mean, it's nothing to do with the Isle of Man, but tangentially it is, and that is a potentially more left-wing government in the UK.
Well, it's traditional not to comment too much about what's going on across, but it does seem like we'll have a new Prime Minister in September.
Right. Does the Treasury pay any attention to what happens over there?
Of course we do. In fact, I got this morning a letter from a minister about e-visas and electronic travel authorisation. So, of course we do. We have officers in touch with Whitehall. We're having a Timewood Day on July the 1st at the invitation of the Speaker on the 1st of July in the Speaker's Hall in Westminster. Yeah, we have lots of contact. And, you know, best wishes to Mr. Burnham, if he is anointed as the Prime Minister before September.
Okay, this is a message in from Terry. Terry with an I. Hello, Terry. We're talking about the structural budget deficit and where it is with us and our reliance on reserves or spending that is continually growing. We heard about Manx Care or DHSC getting £3 odd million last week, and finding sustainable revenue sources. Just talk us through that, would you?
Thank you, Terry. What an important question, and what a huge question. The reserves, despite interest rate and stock market and oil price damage, are still secure. They're still large. We, unfortunately, in recent years, we've had to use interest from those reserves and the reserves themselves sometimes to finance government expenditure, which keeps on growing, mostly to cover healthcare expenditure, rising healthcare expenditure. But we do have a plan in place, because the point that the questioner made by asking that question is incredibly important. Put one, we've got to move away, first of all, from using the interest on the reserves and then from using the reserves themselves.
Yeah, you've been, I mean, forgive me, I'm interpreting you. In the past, you don't seem too happy about this trajectory with the reserves.
No, and I'm still not. It's an incredibly precarious position. I've noticed already that so many of the candidates that have declared are focused on spending and extra spending, and the real focus this election needs to be the economy, public finance. And when we get the economy right and public finance right, then we can start talking about improving public services. But the economy and public finance have to come first.
Okay. Which in an election year is not a terribly popular thing to say to people. We're going to cut things.
I think you're disrespecting the electorate. I think the electorate, when they're presented the information, when they have the analysis behind it, I think they'll respect that. I think that's disrespectful to the electorate, and I'm not that. I do think this election, the public will understand that making sure the economy is right, making sure the public finances is right, are more important than going around promising the earth.
Okay, let's get to the lines. And first of all, it's Mark with us now. Hello, Mark, you're live with the Treasury Minister.
Good afternoon, Andy and Mr. Thomas. I'm just phoning up regarding this issue with fraud and this gentleman who's had 85,000 pounds worth of taxpayers' money. Obviously, his solicitor has gone into court and actually fought for him under the ADHD and mental health. When are we going to stop using these issues for getting money back. It's used quite a lot now, mental health. I used to be a healthcare support worker, and I have worked with people with mental health. Do excuse me, I am a bit nervous. I have worked on a unit with mental health, and I can assure you that people with mental health would not do what this gentleman has done, and he should hold his head up in shame. But also, what is going on in the civil servants, because this should have been picked up before 3 years that he's been doing this, and why was his national insurance number not picked up when the company he was working for should have been paying national insurance for him?
Okay, all right, Mark, we appreciate it. Thanks. You don't sound nervous at all, by the way. Treasury Minister.
Now, well done. That's a very informative call, and I'll follow it up with you later, but obviously you will understand I can't comment on any particular case, and I'm not fully cited and briefed on this case. So the issue you raise about making sure that fraud is made as hard as possible and then is prosecuted thereafter is very important, not only in Social Security, but in every other area of public finances, firstly, and secondly, mental health is an important issue. And from what you're saying, it mixes in with some other conditions. So, thanks for the call. Please, if you can, leave your contact details with Manx Radio, and I'll be back in touch to understand more about what you've just told the nation.
All right, Mark, I think we've got your details. If you're content with that, then the Treasury Minister will be back in touch with you. Aside of that, and obviously we're not going to name any names or anything like that, but people often see fraudulent claims and this, that, and the other in the media and what have you, and I understand it's a minuscule part of what is spent, but psychologically it doesn't sit well with the public, does it?
No, that's right. And also last week or the week before, a written question, we answered it very quickly, and I don't think we did an adequate explanation of it, but I revealed how much had been written off because of errors in processing pensions and child benefits and other social security payments, and that's not good as well. We want the most efficient, effective government spending people's money on the public services that we provide. So we've got to make sure that fraud is prevented and also our own errors and our own inefficiencies.
Okay. Mr. Thomas, of course, is standing in the constituency of Douglas Central, and currently the only other candidate who's declared is Peter Shimmin for the election later on this year. And Bonzo is with us now. Hello, Bonzo. You're live with the Treasury Minister.
Hello there. Yes. Hello, and hi there, Chris. Yes. Quick question. Shouldn't the steam packet be nationalised?
Very quick question. Some people say the steam packet is nationalised. The Isle of Man government owns, through Treasury, 100% of the steam packet.
Ah, well, it isn't, is it? Because it's operated in the same way as a commercial company.
So
It's not operated as a part of economic policy.
So basically, it's an arm's length entity. Company law applies rather than some of the sort of public law around statutory boards and government departments. Fair point. Some people always say that nationalisation involves sort of forced expropriation, whereas this was purchased, the debt was paid, taken on, and the like. But I take your point. Some people have always gone further to say the exact opposite policy conclusion that you've just floated, Bonzo, which is some people have said, why don't we take in extra private investment, either from the people of the Isle of Man or as a strategic investment from a private partner, to make sure that we all remember that this is arm's length and is a company that's running as a company, an operating company.
Okay, Bonzo, what do you think is wrong with the current situation?
Well, in that it has to operate as a company. It has to operate it's legally obliged to maximise profits.
And there's nothing.
And everything, to maximise its return to shareholders. Yeah,
that's true. But you're missing out one vital part of the picture, which I've got to be honest, the government hasn't reflected on as much as it should have done. And in fact, there was a hijack of a motion that I took a few years ago by when they created a parliamentary committee that also you know, push this off into the long grass, but basically alongside the shareholder agreement and the shareholder relationship, we have the sea services agreement, which takes into account things like pricing, things like the economic impact, the community, routes, ports. So they're all in the sea services agreement, which we haven't focused on sufficiently, and we need to do so for the points that you make. The point I was saying about the committee is that they basically missed the 5-yearly chance to review the deadline through their work, and that was disappointing. We've not got that chance inside the 25-year sea services agreement now for another few years.
Bonzo?
Well, you know, yes, well, as you say, that's a failure to correct in that sense. And that's why, instead of the sea services agreement, we need the steam packet actually within government control, rather than having to work on the idea of a sea services agreement, which, well, I think we can look around, you can ask most people, what does the sea service agreement do for... really at the moment do for people, both ordinary travellers and for businesses and freight? Answer, not really enough.
Okay, fair point. And I've always been a campaigner for changes to the sea services agreement. So, for instance, there's an automatic annual increase related to the Manx CPI in standard freight fares and charges. There's commentary about the fuel surcharge, which can be addressed. We've got to finance vessels. I do take your point that we need to look again at the sea services agreement. And if my original motion had been carried on, we'd also be looking at perhaps bringing the sea services, the steam packet, into the similar sort of regime for companies like Islands Energy and Manx Telecom.
Okay, final word, Bonzo.
I'm afraid the sea services agreement again is the thing in the way. I don't know of a lifeline service elsewhere in the world which is run as a for-profit company. You have CalMac and things, CalMac and such, in Scotland, the Western Isles and stuff. And I think BNI receive quite substantial subsidies. Stena, I think, but it has subsidies as well. So the idea that it should be this arm's-length company, rather than... because it is absolutely and utterly critical to the Isle of Man's economy. Pretty much everything for the Isle of Man's economy depends on the boat.
Well, I think you're picking something tiny, because 100% of the shares of the steam packet are owned for the public through Treasury and the Isle of Man government. There's 6 monthly meetings with the board. I've got my first one coming up soon. The sea services agreement there is to set the overall framework. I disagree with you that we need to go further in terms of taking control. I'm not sure how you can nationalise something more than owning 100%. I think what you're saying is that you want the prices to be lower or whatever, which is different from you can't own more than 100% of something. And I think we might be better off to secure the arm's length nature of the operation, and also to help us in terms of strategic partnerships. We might even think about going the other way, because the steam packet company in the past did have shares for local people, and it could have strategic partners as well.
OK, all right. Bonzo, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling today.
OK, then, thanks. Bye.
19 minutes past 12. On that, a message in from Yvonne, who just says, if the steam packet is ours, why is it exempt from FOIs?
Good point. I made that motion, government. After I last made it, I was made Treasury Minister. I had thought we would be getting a report back about that from government, but I haven't seen it as yet. But it's a very good point. What needs to be done is that the Schedule 1, as it's called, needs to be amended by the Council Ministers. A consultation about that's taken place. Treasury said it had no problem with it being in the Freedom of Information regime before I joined Treasury. And I do think that that's the direction of travel.
Okay. And also on that subject as well, you've said, I mean, everybody knows that the steam packet was a cash cow for whoever owned it, or whether it was Macquarie, whether it was the Espirito Santo Bank, or whoever. And obviously now that benefit has gone to Treasury, and everybody, it's better that it comes to the Isle of Man government than anybody else. However, would it not be better if the steam packet perhaps did a bit more in terms of PR for local people? Years ago, steam packet used to have, you know, you bought five tickets and the sixth one was, you got an average of what the previous five were off that price. There was an incentive and some kind of tangible benefit to people.
I agree. And in my first meeting, not formal, but in my first meetings with the chair and some key executives, that did come up. And I do think they're investigating a residence scheme. I also think that the steam packet is a you know, frontline worker for the Isle of Man. And I think they've got to take that position seriously. And I think they do. And I think we can work on it. And back to the point about capital, we have to remember that £160 million of our £400 million bond in 2021 went at 1.7% interest rate to the steam packet, £80 million to purchase the Manxman and £80 million to refinance the loans. They've had a lot of money. They're trying to, you know, like, as an arm's length company, they're using revenue to think about the next new vessel or the next replacement vessel, at least, and that's being for the Mananan. And also they've kept the Ben McCree, which is, you know, which is being used to grow the market, I believe.
Okay. Do you know when they're going to be buying the new vessel?
The sea services agreement required it by the end of 2026. Right. It's been the intention for several years that they won't be till 2030, I think.
Okay. Right. Let's get to Malcolm's note. Just says,
and that's coming into use rather than being purchased. So the decisions about that are being made in the next few years.
Okay. For Minister Thomas, can you tell me if the 5% VAT for entertainment and restaurants has been enacted? I haven't seen any reductions at the eateries and coffee shops, says Malcolm.
I think it comes in on the 21st of June from memory, so it's this week.
Okay. And Peter said, public spending's continuing to rise, but many residents still feel services are getting worse. If you could stop or reduce one area of government activity tomorrow to free up money for higher priorities, what would it be?
That is very, very unfair to put on me.
It is, and very reductive, Peter.
Very reductive, but I don't know. We've got to look at it in every area of government. We've got to look at the Department for Enterprise and make, so for instance, many people in business talk about reducing the number of agencies as a first step to reducing the amount that we can afford to spend on generalised encouragement of the economy. But, you know, there are some very good people and there are some very important roles in enterprise. When it comes to health, there has to be areas, transformation programs and the like, that eventually we'll have to finish and we have to move over to just focusing on providing healthcare services. Wouldn't it be great I've got to be fair to my own department as well, and wouldn't it be great if we can, in Treasury, can find some things that we can share with local authorities so that we can empower them better to do things locally and solve their own problems rather than coming to us to solve their problems.
Well, the magic phrase is always reducing the size of government or cutting government spending. Unless it involves me, that is, I'm talking in terms of the public. So nobody wants their budget cut. Nobody ever wants their budget cut, but everybody always wants the services. And politicians and senior civil servants have to navigate this.
Yeah, but Treasury has been working for some time on what's called priority-based budgeting. One of my big problems with the budget reform debate that took place in Tynwald last week was there wasn't really any focus on that programme, but that's about doing exactly what you said. It's about what we have to provide, and if we want to make alternative choices between not providing as much of something or not providing it at all or providing it in a different way, what are the options? And that priority-based budgeting will be finishing over the summer into the autumn to help the next government begin to save, you know, perhaps hundreds of jobs, contract expenditure to improve the efficiency of capital maintenance programmes. So there's lots coming up.
This is from 313. The message is, do Manx Care not have to abide by financial regulations because DHSC, but not Manx Care, a designated body under the 1985 Treasury Act?
They do have to abide by financial regulations.
OK, let's get to back to the phones. Oh, it's Julian with us now. Hello, Julian. You're live with Chris Thomas, MHK.
Hi, Andy, and hello, Chris.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Hiya. I have to say, I do agree with Bonzo what he's saying. If you've got 100% of the shareholding on the steam packet, I can't see why. If you've got full control of everything, just get the prices down. I think it's you could say that the steam packet's balance sheet is strangling everybody else's balance sheet at the moment. You know, there would be house building prices, cafes, all kinds of stuff. Anybody that ships stuff here or agriculture shipping off the island would make a heck of a difference from a fiscal point of view if they could have a meaningful reduction in those costs, I would have thought. Anyway, electricity. It's been mentioned that the reason our electricity prices are so high in the Isle of Man is because part of what we pay is going towards paying off the past loan on Paul Rose Power Station. Can you confirm if this is the case? And if so, can you say what the percentage of our bills are that's being used to pay off the loan?
So, so on the first point on sea services, I do agree with you, and if it's also Bonzo's position, I agree with Bonzo that the price of freight, the price of on off island travel is incredibly important on the Isle of Man, and anything we can do to reduce that is valuable. In terms of electricity, the price of electricity pretty much. I think it's normally is determined on an inflation-related basis. The MUA is carrying £400 million plus of debt. The power station is perhaps a... I can't remember what it proportionate is depreciated, but let's say a fifth to a quarter of that. We've also got all the gas infrastructure, we've got the water infrastructure, the sewerage infrastructure. That's all part of that, and £80 million of the bond went to the MUA at 1.7%. They've still got a substantial amount inside the consolidated loans fund, which is paid at a higher rate. And the largest amount of capital that went out of the only budget I've taken through Tim Wood is going to the Manx Utilities Authority, and they do pay interest on that. So I'm not going to give you an exact percentage across the top of my head because I don't know every resource, but the electricity and sea services are incredibly important components for the cost of living in the Isle of Man.
Okay, what's behind your question, Julian?
Well, I'm just curious as to why we're paying so much. For example, Malta, at the moment, they're generating 87% of their electricity from natural gas, which they have to get off a ship, which means another process where they have to degas it. And they're only paying 11p, so they're paying a third of our price, and they've got almost no renewables at all. So they're almost in the same boat as we are, but they're a third of the price. But this kind of leads me on to the statement that was made from Ørsted recently, where they said they might supply electricity to the island, resulting in a 10 to 15% reduction in prices. I'm just wondering, what price exactly are they talking about before they apply this theoretical discount? And they're also talking about getting into a long-term fixed price power purchase agreement, locking us into long-term pricing. So what happens if that happens, if the price of natural gas falls dramatically, as has been forecast recently by Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase and Morgan Stanley?
So you go to the heart of hedging, because, you know, hedging isn't speculative. Hedging is about locking in the price, just like you described. So a few years ago, the Manx Utilities Authority did have to write off money because they had hedged. They would have benefited if the price had gone up, but the price went down. So they lost money because they'd locked in the price. What you say is correct. I'm not briefed on what discussions have taken place between Manx Utilities Authority and Ørsted about supplying the direct market. What I do know is that the electricity pricing agreement is a five-year agreement, which was brought to Tim Wood, and that basically is about CPI-related increases in electricity prices, although gas price reduction is mentioned, and I guess alternative energy reduction could also be mentioned in the future by the next government when it sets the tone and comes back to Tim Wood with another electricity pricing strategy, and all these things have to be on the table. I mean, we can't just pretend we don't have £400 million debt. Once before in my political career, I worked with the current Chief Minister when he was Treasury Minister to write off nearly £100 million at the MUA of debt to reduce electricity prices. I remember Alan Bell, 2011, 2013, again, paid a huge amount of money to reduce electricity prices. These things are on the table, but we're not, you know, the public purse is precious at the moment. We're not flush like governments were previously, and that's why we've been We've been talking about long-term resilience in terms of energy security, and we haven't done anything rash in terms of the spike this spring and summer, with affected by the Iranian situation, the Hormuz Strait situation, and through the election, you know, I'm sure Treasury Minister will still have decisions to make about how we deal with volatility in gas, electricity and other prices.
Okay, final word, Julian.
Yeah, I understand that there's new legislation that will have to be written to facilitate taxation of more vanin. But I'm just wondering, on the other side of that, if we're getting intermittent power from Ørsted, if that's what they're going to do, we can only turn the power station down so much. So are we going to end up with constraint payments that we're going to have to pay Ørsted if we don't want to take it? And also the other costs, like running cables from Groudal 6 miles, balancing costs, synchronous inertia, battery storage facilities cost an absolute fortune. So in the balance of talking about more vanning, we're going to have a heck of a lot of costs on our side before you even get started with this $57 million a year. So
There are no plans for any public expenditure that I know of in terms of battery, in terms of constraint capacity payments from the Isle of Man public purse. These are all imagined. I'm very sorry. So I'm sure you've read the submission by Treasury, the 15-page submission by Treasury, Hearing 4 document, bottom one in the Isle of Man government decision that went up on 17th of June. And that we talk about public benefits. There's also documents there from the DOI, which have just been submitted, and you know, I want to limit my comments to what Treasury officers and DOI officers are submitting into that process during the examination process. But you know, you make a fair point. Those sorts of things are in the world of wind turbines, and I very much hope and expect and know is the case that these are the things, these are the questions that are being asked around Cairvi, around More Vanin, and around other energy proposals going forward.
Okay. Julian, we appreciate your call. Thanks for being with us today. We're with Treasury Minister Chris Thomas, MHK, on Man in Line.
Remember when you used to get business advice from your bank manager? Stiff upper-lipped pillars of the community whom you called sir? Nowadays, you can get all the advice on every business issue from the friendly, down-to-earth chaps at Crow Isle of Man. And some of the chaps are even women. Imagine. Crow Isle of Man. Global presence. Local knowledge.
Crow Isle of Man. Crow.im.
Spring into summer and refresh your home at Miller Chaps. With two abundant floors bursting with special promotions on sofas, dining and conservatory furniture. Amazing savings on stressless chairs and sofas and dining furniture up to 40% off. Half price rugs, offers on curtains and wallpaper to match. And great offers on Parker Knoll, Ercol and home office furniture. Lighter nights and brighter days. Make the most of them with Millie Chaps of Ramsey.
Heating oil for homes, powering farms and businesses, keeping you moving with petrol stations across the island. Ellen Vanin Fuels. Call us on 84 4000.
The race is on to help local charity I'll Stand Up to Suicide, and you can join in. It's the KPMG Promenade Relay, Friday the 10th of July along Douglas Seafront, with 100% of entry fees and sponsorship going to I'll Stand Up to Suicide, dedicated to preventing suicide and providing support to those in crisis on the Isle of Man. Gather your team of up to four people to tackle a 10k course, or go it alone over 5k. Entries close the 8th of July. Visit kpmg.ws/promrelay2026 for details and registration. The KPMG Promenade Relay, supported by Manx Radio.
The countdown to the 2026 general election is officially on. On Thursday, the 24th of September, you'll get to have your say on who should represent you in the House of Keys for the next 5 years. But what are the things you really want to know from your candidates? How they feel about wind farms? What they do to improve healthcare? Or how they plan to tackle government efficiency? Whatever it is, if you have a burning question for those standing, we want to hear from from you. You can find out how and everything else you need to know about the upcoming election on our dedicated election website. Just head to manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Chris Thomas, MHK, the Treasury Minister, is here. A message in from Norman, and this is just a general comment. We seem to have a generation of politicians who've only ever known how to spend money. Previously, we had politicians who generated money for the Isle of Man. And does this bode well for the new administration if we're going to get politicians who don't know how to make the Isle of Man run like a business?
Yeah, no, fair point. So in the 3 months before I became Treasury Minister, I did move a few motions to show the public that I'm serious about the economy and public finances have to go ahead of spending money. So we've talked about the territorial seas. That's something that Treasury officers have said in their submission to the process. We need to, I've taken some legislation through about financial services and e-gaming because that's been a huge sector. Obviously, I started my first budget with the month before not delaying the increase in the minimum wage and increasing the personal tax allowance to make sure that the economy could do right by us if we do right by it. I've also got a motion through about the 50th anniversary, which could help the tourism pitch for the Isle of Man. So I completely agree with, I think it's Norman, that the economy needs to come first. I also agree that there's a generational aspect to this, and we've got to make sure that during the election the public make sure that the candidates that get elected are focusing on earning money rather than just spending it.
Okay, David, you're live with Chris Thomas, MHK. Hello, David.
Hi, Andy and Chris.
Morning,
can I,
David,
ask a couple of questions? Can you hear me? That's amazing.
Loud and clear.
Loud and clear.
Can I ask the Treasury Minister then, with the local government unit, which is not called that anymore, is houses are run on the island within government, wouldn't it be a really better situation is to release those stock to each of the participating local authorities around the Isle of Man and actually reduce your costs of running staff for the DOI or other departments?
Okay.
And the second
question one, that is.
Well, it's a very, a nice, good idea. Let's make sure that the next government has that on the table. I mean, not necessarily to all local authorities, because obviously there are only seven or so local authorities that are active in the housing market. So it would be the case, as happened previously, that some local authorities would be helping run houses that somebody else owns around them. So, for instance, up north, the Northern Parish houses from DOI were managed in terms of tenancies and maintenance by Ramsey Town Commissioners. That's a very good idea.
Okay. And
so what the second question is to do with funding of local authority or schemes we have in being. This is reference to us in Ogden as well. I'm not speaking on behalf of the commissioners, just an individual commissioner he is. We're asking for funding, and it's in within Treasury, and we're not getting the answers quick enough or getting the answers yes or no. And the reason why it's no.
Well, you might have been misled in terms of how long Treasury had it. I do think I saw an Onken paper which I think got turned around incredibly quickly in Treasury. So often it's a bit like the old EasyJet flight crew. Everything's always to blame at the airport. It's nothing to do with them leaving late somewhere else and getting behind. You always blame the person who's not sitting with you and close by you. And Treasury has become fashionable to blame Treasury. It used to be fashionable to blame DOI, and Treasury is the new blame person. So there have been some important local authority housing projects that have been funded recently. And the question has been asked about whether that's the most efficient way of doing it. We're looking again at how we fund housing, because at the moment it's very confusing. We've got Manx Development Corporation that's playing. We've got DOI now calling itself its division a housing agency. We've got local authorities. We just want simplicity. We want smaller government. And so this would be a good area, as you suggested, to optimise the resource provision.
Okay, David, what would you do?
I'd have, Chris needs to look at the Ballacurn Trust, which are 12 units there that have been empty since 8 months, is that good value for us as taxpayers or the government?
No, it isn't. But also, you know, we've got, it isn't, no, but obviously it's a trust and it's quite confusing and there's quite a lot of work that needs to be done on those issues. It's not something that's been to Treasury as far as I'm aware. But the other point I'm going to make is recently we had that decision to allow different local authorities to charge different amounts of rent. And we're supposed to have a national policy with uniform policy. And that's interesting in itself. I can imagine a situation where government works with some local authorities and not with all local authorities. And I do think that things like the Balakirn Trust will have to be considered alongside that, the evolution that I'm talking about.
Okay, thanks for that.
Thank you very much, David.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Why did it take, this is Joe, and you mentioned the Manx Development Corporation. This is Joe on 928 who just said, why did it take a challenged FOI request to find out about the old nurse's home and the MDC?
Well,
of course, they weren't subject to FOIs at one point.
Well, they aren't still subject to FOI, but in the same way that you can ask a question about the steam packet through Treasury, you can ask a question of MDC through Treasury because we're the shareholders. If the question is about the allocation policy, I have a confession to make, which I made to Treasury, which is I helped Mr. Kane, if that's the question that's being referenced, I think prepare his freedom of information question as a backbencher. And I think it was about the allocation policy and how the houses in the nurses, the old nurses' home, Tyclag, are being allocated. So yeah, we've got Treasury's got some time to respond. In Treasury, responses are entirely without political intervention. And you know, personally, I do want to know how the MDC properties in the nurses' home were allocated, and I have got a project which I made public in the budget that we're looking at the development viability around the Isle of Man, particularly with reference to the Manx Development Corporation and the Island Infrastructure Scheme, and I've said that that should be reported on in July, Tim Ward.
Did the old nurses' home go over budget?
It didn't go over budget, but it cost a lot of money to you know, to do. So it depends what you mean by over budget. It cost a lot of money and the budget kept getting increased.
Yeah, if it had been a private company, would it have gone over budget?
Yeah, probably. And that's what the development viability study is attesting, you know, because we're looking at the materials costs on the island. We're looking at labour supply and labour availability and labour costs and all of those sorts of things, the way we handle procurement. And all of that's inside this development viability study.
OK, hello, Betty, you're live with the Treasury Minister, Chris Thomas, MHK.
Hello, Betty.
Oh, hi. I listened to the Ofsted update this morning on the radio and two things struck me. One was a single word, could. The island could get 10% off its electricity bill. There was no guarantee that it would. And the second one was that... oh, let me think now. What was the second one? Hold on. They guaranteed that they would pay for everything to be put there, but who would pay for it to be taken away if it didn't work?
Okay. Well, thank you. And that's very perceptive. They are two incredibly important issues. So Treasury has made this official submission at officer level last week about public benefit, economic benefit from the offshore process. So that's a document that I want to make sure that the public is aware of. And I've announced it a few times now so that people can go and look at that 15-page submission. But, you know, you're right. Could. Another submission made last week was about the lease for the Morvanen project that arises from the agreement for lease that was put in place back in 2015. And the amount of electricity that's generated from any lease that would arise from the agreement for lease is blank at the moment. It depends on how much of the seabed that's got the lease on it is got the agreement for lease on it is used, how tall the wind turbines are, what demand there is from the UK and the Isle of Man for any electricity that's generated, so the reality is we are still in the world of could rather than guarantees, and that's why we're having an examination process, and that's why there would have to be other processes around it. And it's a fair point that Betty makes about decommissioning. That's an important part of this whole situation as well.
What do you think about it, Betty?
Well, I wouldn't go ahead with it on a just could, and I certainly would want them to pay for getting, which would be extremely expensive, to getting rid of all these poles, 80-odd poles that they're planning to build off the coast of North Isle of Man. No, I wouldn't go ahead with it.
Okay.
And I think Betty and I relied on that because it was pointed out to me recently. I'd even forgotten because I've got quite a good memory, but I'd forgotten. But back in 2014, we had a debate in Tynwald, and I, myself, and a former MHK from Oncombe were the only two who voted against that policy. And I made a speech about why I'd voted against. And the reason I said I'd voted against was it was completely unclear until we had a marine spatial plan and until we had more information about the law and the finances, you know, why we would vote for something back in 2014. So there you go. I'm glad everybody's caught up with me. Doesn't that sound arrogant? Sorry about that.
All right, thanks, Betty.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Good to hear from you. Thank you. A note in from Catherine in Ramsey, who just said, does this mean Mr. Thomas in the past has been talked about our national gas field? With the Ørsted plan, is our national gas field redundant? Is it a dead dud?
No. The licence to Kroger and the lease agreement for lease with Dong, as it was called then, Ørsted subsequently, were both put in place in the same time, and they're not necessarily mutually exclusive.
Right, we're live with the Treasury Minister through until one today. You can call, text, email and WhatsApp if you have something to ask the Treasury Minister. Of course, I mentioned that Chris Thomas, MHK, is a Douglas Central MHK. He's standing in the current election in September, and the only other candidate so far declared is Peter Shimin.
Visit Ramsey Art Gallery for a fabulous range of top brand watches and stunning gold and silver jewellery, gifts for all occasions, and of course our gallery of prints and original artworks. Find all this and more at Ramsey Art Gallery Jewellers and Engravers, opposite the RNLI shop.
A great night's sleep got even better with Zed's Bedding Store. From quality Beldorm bed linen and mattress protectors, fleece and woven throws, to luxury duvets from the fine bedding company, Zed's Bedding Ramsey, next to Isle of Man Bank.
Discover your dream home in Andreas with Kell Developments. Quality new build 2, 3 and 4 bedroom spacious homes and bungalows, offering countryside living with amazing views just 5 minutes from Ramsey. With latest energy efficiency, contemporary German kitchens, bathrooms and including all flooring, you literally only have to turn the key to your new home. We're in our final phase, so don't miss out. Check our Facebook for show home opening or to arrange a visit. Kell Developments, Oatlands Road, Andreas. Island living, redefined.
Fed up sifting through applications and hitting dead ends? We get it. It's not the high-flying life a boss should have. So step away from the desk, make a coffee, and let us take the reins. Orchard Recruitment adds a refreshing change to your hiring process. Getting to know your business and culture before finding you the right people. We won't send you any old CV. We'll cherry pick. Make your next onboarding fruitful. Visit orchardrecruitment.com.
North Quay Live presents the Jazz and Blues Festival on Saturday, 27th of June from noon on the Quayside in Douglas, raising money for the hospice and RNLI. It's free entry with live music, face painting and other family-friendly activities. North Quay Live, Saturday, 27th of June.
Manx Radio Summer of Football, brought to you by Walton's Electrical Store.
And with all the action now well underway across the USA, Canada and Mexico, we've teamed up with Walton's to give you the chance to win a 55-inch TV. To win, all you have to do is work out the famous footballer in the weekly post that will be pinned to the top of the Manx Radio Facebook page. Then listen out to greatest hits every weekday evening from 7 and Saturday live between 1 and 5 each weekend until the 19th of July for your chance to get your name in the big prize draw.
Enjoy a better picture with a new TV from Walton's for perfect football enjoyment. Walton's have offers across a wide range of TVs and electrical items in store.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
12 minutes before one with Chris Thomas, MHK. Malcolm's on the line now. Hello, Malcolm. You're live with Chris Thomas.
Good afternoon, Malcolm.
Good afternoon, Chris. I'd like to know what your opinion is on the following statement, that I believe that government's priority should be to do away with a ludicrous annual budget process which forces each department to fritter away their annual budget allowance. This causes unnecessary waste and unfocused spend, because if you don't use it, you lose it. Because what happens at the moment, and we've seen it with Phil Gorn's roundabout and the Slock. The department were coming to the end of the year. They hadn't spent their budget. They knew they were going to lose it, and it would be deducted from the next year's budget as well if you don't use it. So they spent money on doing something which was totally unnecessary. It's just one example. But the point I'm really trying to make here is that we have a ludicrous process where it just seems that you can't keep the money over and spend it as you would want to in the first place.
Okay, thank you very much. We have to, you know, it was not fair to keep picking on Phil 10 years after he ceased being an MHK and a minister, because the Slock was in the 2015-16 year, and I think at the time the story was there's very little ironworks on the Slock Road. It needed to be done. The machines were here, so therefore that project became important and was done, whereas many other projects wouldn't have been done. And I say the road is used a lot now for for various things. I've even had to introduce speed limits in the process.
And if it hadn't been done, people would be bellyaching about that.
Well, I take your point, but now we can hold money over for it. And I was a bit surprised. I'll give you another example, which was when we had the project for knees and hips and eyes and the like in the healthcare. That was held over between two financial years, so it can be done. Treasury isn't, that statement might or might not have been very true a decade ago. It's certainly not true now. There are ways of holding money over. And the other point is, since 2016, DOI has been the biggest victim of having its budgets cut. So DOI hasn't got the increased expenditure that education has to an extent, and certainly the healthcare has it during that time. So it's not the question that just by spending your money you keep the money. There's been huge changes in the last decade between different priorities, and keeping governments, maintaining highways has been something that's never been as politically attractive for the politicians in those 10 years, and we haven't done a sufficient job in with our infrastructure.
And does Treasury take kindly to departments asking to carry over?
It's been allowed, and if it's necessary, it's allowed. So what I would say are two things. Firstly, 2023 or thereabouts, perhaps a bit earlier, we moved over to where we started looking at more centralising of infrastructure investment and capital projects, more generally investment. We've got Treasury officers embedded in all of the departments now as finance business partners, and they work some of the time in Treasury and some of the time out in the departments and the like. So we've got priority-based budgeting process ongoing that reports very soon. And so I do think that we've addressed that issue that you raise very wonderfully and valuably, because if that is the situation, it's ridiculous. So I do hope we've moved on from those days.
Malcolm?
Yeah, I'm delighted to hear it, and I just hope that we see positive progress on that front, because okay, having been in local authority, I saw the waste. And contractors would rub their hands with glee.
It was known as the March bonus, Malcolm.
Absolutely. So I'm delighted that we're moving away from it.
And it really is important. I mean, it was massive at the time, because every department liked to have its own finance officer, local, defending the local interests. We've still got a local accountable officer for it, but they are assisted and given advice by Treasury's finance business partner, who's got to be, I hate to use this word, but got two masters. They've got the public purse, Treasury, and the local interest to balance all the time. Must be a very difficult job, but I think they do it really well.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Malcolm. Good to hear from you.
When the man in line's not on air, call Manx Radio to leave your opinion for broadcast on 682 631.
Andrew's our final caller today. Hello, Andrew. You're live with Chris Thomas, MHK.
Hi there, Andy. Hi there, Chris. Good day to you.
Good afternoon.
I just wanted to touch on the motion that Julie Edge brought last week. Mm-hmm. And here we go. There's going to be a spatial plan.
Correct,
and
yeah.
How much is that going to cost? And whose budget is that going to come out of? And the other item I had, please, was about the Liverpool Ferry Terminal. And what element would, if any, would be sub judice to reveal how much is the recovery amount that's being sought in the legal action? And how much have the Attorney General's chambers so far expended on pursuing this?
Okay. Chris Thomas, MHK.
The marine spatial plan that's currently envisaged is led by the Department of Environment, Food and Agriculture, I believe, but it's cross-government in the sense that territorial seas is very much the Department of Infrastructure, and in the legislation... you know, the legislation goes back to 2016. First of all, regulations have got to be made about that. The policy statements can be made. So it will cost money. Work was started on it in 2013. That work hasn't been lost. The Kroger process and the Ørsted process have contributed more information to it. We do, differently from what Julie Edge implied, we do have a taxation regime for hydrocarbons, and we made good progress on one for alternative energies. We have made progress on things like health and safety regulations for the territory seas on various installations. So it will cost money, but myself and government, because we amended it, we do think it's important to set out somewhere how we're going to balance the tourism uses, the hydrocarbons uses, the alternative energy uses, make sure we secure our shipping, sea services, fishing and all the other things of aquaculture, everything else that we can do with our territorial seas. In terms of Liverpool Ferry Terminal, I have an idea myself, as you would expect, on both the questions that you've answered. I would have liked to go along to the Public Accounts Committee to talk with the officers about that. The Public Accounts Committee refused me that courtesy, and I can't reveal today in open what the target is for recovery of costs, and I'm not sure how much, whether we have already revealed how much has been spent on legal fees. I think we have, so if you make sure you leave an email downstairs, I'll send you all the public information about the amount of money that's been spent to date, if that has been published previously.
Okay, all right. Thanks for calling today, Andrew. We appreciate it. In about 30 seconds, Brian said, Andy Burnham doesn't like offshore financial jurisdictions. If he becomes Prime Minister, will this be the end for the Isle of Man as an offshore financial centre?
No, it certainly won't. I think we'll work with the next Prime Minister, just like we have with every previous Prime Minister. Andy Burnham knows the Isle of Man well, representing where he does, and I think he's been involved with our health services in the past.
OK. Thank you, Chris. Good to hear from you today. The Treasury Minister, of course, is standing in the election in September in Douglas Central, as is Peter Shimmin. Chris Thomas was elected in May 2013, re-elected in 2016 and in 2021, and he will be standing this coming September. That's it. Back tomorrow. We're live at St Ninian's School tomorrow with the sixth formers. Let's hear what they have to say. Thanks to Howie on the phones today.
WINT.